T.C. Steele is a name that's fairly well known to art lovers in central Indiana, and especially Brown County. But the putative father of the art colony of the Midwest was of a different generation than most of the art colonists.
We have to remember Steele was already 60 years old when he built his House of the Singing Winds.
Although his hilltop residence may have served as a beacon for other artists, Steele wasn't necessarily rubbing elbows with the colonists flocking to Nashville.
Although he was very gracious and I'm sure received people at his house, he wasn't running around and hiking and doing the pancake breakfasts and painting with the colony. He wasn't part of the colony and actually at one point said that he really couldn't find much to paint in Nashville. He really preferred to be out in the deep woods and away from the more cultivated hollyhocks and gardens and things that the Brown County artists were attracted to.
So just who was this old hollyhock-disdaining painter who lived up on the hill with his considerably younger wife? Rachel Berenson Perry, fine arts curator for the Indiana State Museum in Indianapolis, set out to trace an important chapter in Steele's life that predated his connection to the beloved Brown County landscapists. Perry's book, T.C. Steele and the Society of Western Artists, charts the progress of the painter's attempts to put Midwestern art on the map, going back to 1894, when Steele and four compatriots were shown together as five Hoosier painters.
When they had an exhibition in 1894 in Chicago, they were lauded as really the new thing in American art. The Hoosier group were really considered to be cutting edge because although they had all studied in Europe, they came back to paint what they knew best. And kind of turned Hoosiers on to the fact that they had a lot of beauty in their own state, despite the fact that it wasn't very dramatic by national standards. We didn't have mountains and the sea, but we certainly had our own subtle beauty.
On the heels of their critical success in Chicago, three of the Hoosier Five, along with 15 other prominent artists from Midwestern centers, organized to form the Society of Western Artists, a name that might ring odd to contemporary ears.
Actually, the center point of the population of the United States was in Brown County, Indiana in 1896. But we were really considered to be the West culturally.
Far from the Eastern establishment, these so-called Western artists lacked the infrastructure of museums, galleries, and publications necessary to promote themselves professionally.
The top artists from Cincinnati and Cleveland and St. Louis and Detroit and Chicago and Indianapolis, all considering themselves to be Western artists, felt that they were being disregarded by the arts organizations and exhibits on the East Coast and Pennsylvania also. And so they really wanted to gain a national presence, and they developed the society to have an annual exhibition at all of their cities, and this lasted for 19 years.
Between 1896 and 1914, the American art scene went through a lot of changes. When the society was founded, the impressionist style and outdoor practice of the Hoosier group held sway in the U.S.
The whole idea of going outside to paint, doing plein air paintings, was something that kind of swept the country. There were art colonies all over the place, Coscom, Lyme, Connecticut, and William Merritt Chase had a school of plein air painters also.
But Impressionism had blossomed in Paris 20 years earlier, and by the 1890s had already transformed into post-Impressionism in Europe. The Grand Jatte, for example, Seurat's pointillist tour de force, and Van Gogh's Starry Night had long since been exhibited when Steele and his Midwestern coterie were transcribing their impressions of the shifting light.
T.C. Steele, above all else, was a true nature lover. And when you read his diaries, he is just very, very spiritual about nature. That's what excited him. And trying to capture the light and the very moment of the day and the different seasons was something that really, really meant a lot to him. And it wasn't ever going to be translated into something that was avant-garde. Even when he was doing what was called Impressionism, it was very representational, as were all of the Indian artists.
As time went on, Perry's study recounts, Intercity rivalries and sagging sails, along with the logistics of coordinating the touring exhibition, made for a case of diminishing returns for the Society of Western Artists. Ideologically, too, it was increasingly estranged from the contemporary art front. The New York Armory Show of 1913, which showcased contemporary movements in European art and defined the art market as we know it, seems not to have made a ripple.
The Society of Western Artists never talked about it, so I don't know whether they just ignored it or whether they, I know they must have been aware of it, but they were unwilling or unable to change their focus. The Society of Chicago Artists, on the other hand, did acknowledge the Armory Show and had a big falling out between the people who were more modern in their thinking and those who wanted to stay with the status quo, and somehow managed to work that out and survive, and they still survive today.
The Society of Western Artists, however, mounted their last show in 1914. Their sales were never booming, and even today, a painting by Steele doesn't fetch nearly as much at auction as one by William Merritt Chase, a Hoosier-born artist who established himself in New York. Still, their efforts went far in establishing the nuts and bolts of the art world in the heartland.
The schools and institutions and the infrastructure for people who wanted to be artists and grew up in the United States became, you didn't have to go to Europe. You could study in the United States and be a good artist.
But the coastal bias that prompted the formation of the Society of Western Artists in 1896 is still a factor. Perry's catalog is accompanied by an exhibition at the Indiana State Museum titled Making It in the Midwest, Artists Who Chose to Stay. The show includes many of the historical examples from her book, along with contemporary work.
Some artists live very frugally so that they can pursue their muse. Others have galleries. Others market themselves online internationally. So I was interested in capturing different kinds of stories in addition to different mediums and showing the real talent that still exists today in Indiana.
For WFIU's Artworks, I'm Yael Cassander.